This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down.
Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. God, family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do trap supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got it. Wildlife Control Supplies, proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're in the ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company, have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you. Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it, fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light, sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dead camp. Shotgun toter, Republican voter. Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA. Cause this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got.
Far better is it to dare mighty things, to win glorious triumphs, even though checkered by failure, than to rank with those poor spirits who neither enjoy nor suffer much because they live in the gray twilight that knows not victory nor defeat. In any moment of decision, the best thing you can do is the right thing. The next best thing you can do is the wrong thing. And the worst thing you can do is nothing. Believe you can and you're halfway there. People ask the difference between a leader and a boss. The leader leads and the boss drives. Speak softly and carry a big stick. You will go far. To educate a man in mind and not in morals is to educate a menace to society. Far and away, the best prize of life is to offer is a chance to work hard at work worth doing. The only man who never makes a mistake is a man who never does anything. If you could kick the person in the pants responsible for most of your trouble, you wouldn't sit for a month. The only time you're really alive fully is between 30 and 60. The young are slave to dreams, the old servants of regrets. Only the middle aged have their five senses and the keeping of their wits. And I say again, one of my favorite quotes that I wish everybody would learn when they're about, I don't know, let's say 3-4 years old. Far better is it to dare mighty things, to win glorious triumphs, even though checkered by failure, than to rank with those poor spirits who neither enjoy nor suffer much because they live in the gray twilight that knows not victory nor defeat. Now, all these are quote, guys, from Theodore Roosevelt. Even though he was a big government progressive, he did say some pretty cool things. And I think it's some of these are just astonishing when they come from one person. He must have been a very interesting man to come from. Well, hello everybody. This is Clint Locklear for Trapping Across America. I just thought I'd read a few quotes. If you ever wondered what goes on in the mind of Clint on a day-to-day basis, you just heard a lot of them. I look at stuff like this every day. I think it keeps one centered. It's a lot more important to worry about what the Kardashians are doing or what the politicians are doing or something like that. Because, like one of the quotes say, the best prize that life has to offer is a chance to work hard at work worth doing. And when it comes to trapping, a lot of times, that's some of the most enjoyable and work worth doing that you can do in the modern age that we have. Now, as you can tell, I'm in a little weird mood by starting off in such things. I have to admit, Veterans Day was yesterday. Today's Thursday. I've got a business personal instruction come tomorrow, so I won't be able to do the show tomorrow. So I'm doing it the day before. Wife's out of town. I got to thinking about Veterans Day this afternoon towards the end of the evening. And a lot of the guys that I knew, thinking about that and just so impressed with a lot of the people that I knew in the military. And if you served, you know, hats off to you, brother or sister for that matter. I mean, you know, you went through a lot to do what you did, and I salute you 100% about that. And I want to play a song, and I want you to listen to this in maybe a little bit different view, not the way that it's meant to be listened to. It's a little rendition of a song that you probably know. I've played it before. But when it talks about the home of the brave, guys, I want you to think about something. I want you to put this in context. When it's talking about the home of the brave, it sure as crap is not Washington, D.C. It's not some pencil-necked little weasel politician that's trying to figure out some way to get more money from a lobbyist or something like that. What home of the brave really means, that's the guy that goes out at 3 o'clock in the morning because he wants to see if he can catch more coon. That's your neighbor that has a sick spouse and they're sticking with them even when it'd be easier to leave. Or the business owner that's risking everything that he has because he has a dream to have a successful business. Home of the brave is the Americans that you see every day. Not the Americans that you see on TV. Not the Americans that everybody thinks about or anything. It's the soldier that goes out, does what he's supposed to do, and he does it humbly. And it's the same with when it comes to anybody else in society. I do believe America is a very special place because at least as of today, we still have somewhat of our freedom left, and that's very rare in the world. So when you listen to this song, think about Home of the Brave very differently. Think about how powerful that is. A bunch of people came over here many, many years ago. They gave the middle finger to England and told them they weren't going to put up with their crap no more. That is amazing. Think about Hugh Glass getting mauled by grizzly bears and running from Indians and having to stay under logs under the river and sucking air out between the bark. Think about how amazing an American like that is. Think about the business owners and the guys that go to work at a factory when they really don't want to, because they want to make sure that their family has everything that they need. That's the home of the brave that this song is talking about. And if you think about it in that way, it's not jingoistic in the normal way that people think about the song, but it's pretty impressive when you think about the Americans that you rub shoulders with throughout the year that are true Americans, and that's really cool. So I'm going to go ahead and play this just because it's my show. I'm in a kind of a weird mood. I've been thinking about a lot of the guys that I knew in the military. Me, some Coke. Maybe just a little bit too much of Kentucky's Finest. But that's just where we're going to start off this show with. And we're going to get in some Coyotes. And if we don't run out of time, we're going to get in some Muskrats. So here's a song, but think about it in a totally different way. Show with some stuff about coyotes. But guys, I have to warn you, if you never listened to the show or you don't know me very well, this time of year, I kind of get a little weird. I have to admit it. The temperature outside is feeling just a little bit too close to trapping season. We still have a couple of weeks here. I got to go up to Michigan with F&T guys and play around a little bit up there for TV, but that's not exactly quite trapping. And I get to sit around thinking about things, and we put up a lot of federales today, so maybe, I don't know, a little bit intoxicated by that. Whatever it is, I'm in a pretty good mood, a little bit of weird mood, but hey, what's good with trapping without a little bit of weirdness? So I'm just warning you a little bit. This is a question from Jesse, and it says, really enjoyed 178. Think the shows that help us reflect on the grand scheme of trapping are extremely helpful and encouraging, so keep up the great work. I have a couple of questions that might be helpful to others. Snares for kill poles. My kill poles are 1.5 feet to 2 feet out of the ground. My snares are 40 inches long with 2 foot 5 inches deer stop cam locks or slim locks. My snares want to flip upside down and act funky as I hang them. Are they too short? Some of my snares have swivels, and that has saved me a lot of headaches. Is it the length, or do I need to swivel to make it cooperate? You've already figured this out, Jesse. That is exactly what's going on. When you put a kill pole, and if someone's listening to this and they don't know what that is, a kill pole is a system to put snares in, period. And it was designed by Ron Hansen out of Iowa, probably back in the 60s to 70s, if I were guessing. Not quite sure on the date. This system was designed for raccoons, and depending on who you talk to of when they were seeing Ron Hansen play with this, sometimes the pole was all the way in the ground and sometimes it was out of the ground. What makes the kill pole system, even though it's not as popular in trapping, and I do not understand why, and I have never understood why, is because it is one of the simplest, most effective snaring systems known to man, end of story. It is that amazing of a system if someone would go use it. And a lot of guys will go, well, I don't want to carry the pole, I don't want to do this, or I just want to, you know, have my little roll of wire and put my snares out there, which is all fine. But the kill pole system, if you're going to be a predator guy, a cat guy, a fox guy, a coon guy, and you want to put snares out so freaking fast that your head spins and your competition is going home crying to their wife at night because they can't get a hold of you, this is a system you use. Now, kill pole may or may not be a kill pole. That depends where you're at. Where I live here in Tennessee, early season in most places, especially in the east here, it's not a kill pole. It's a support system, but it's a self-contained. So I want to explain what this system is in case someone doesn't know what it is. The original ones were half inch rebar, 3 foot long. They had a washer system where you had two washers. You had about a half inch in between them. You had a hole drilled down between both washers off to one edge right over the top of each other. Underneath that, you had a piece of number 9 annealed wire, so it's soft and you can bend it. You have that under that, and you would put your snare and cinch that in between those two washers at the top. And then you would put your cotter pin, and the cotter pin would not let the snare rotate around the washers. And in theory, in a lot of Iowa, especially as quick as winter can come there, and if you look at the time and the way the weather was back in the 70s and 80s, this system was a kill pole pretty much probably within 1 week after season started. You put the re-rod in 3 feet long, like I said, depending on who you talk to and when they watched the system go in back then, it would have been left 12, 14 inches out of the ground for raccoon or all the way in. Red O'Hearn wants to have it all the way in. I don't quite understand that, but I'm not going to argue with Red either. So you have this system. It's a complete unit. It's a snare support. It's a snare holder. And it is a support system for the snare. And it's an anchor system all in one piece. Which, so if you can imagine, you can grab three of these in your left hand, have a hammer in your right hand, have your snares already pre-hooked. And the way that you do that is you go and put your snare in between those washers. You put your cotter pin in. You open the whammy, which was what Ron Hansen used on all these. And you go in and put that on your support wire. So you had the loop hanging off. So you get out of the truck. You walk over to a coon trail. You just take one. You set it right next to the trail. 5 or 6 whacks with a hammer. You take the number nailed wire. You adjust that over the trail. Your snare is in place. It's anchored. It's supported. And the raccoon will wrap up. So there's not going to be a lot of movement when a car drives by if you don't get there before daylight the next day. Then you repeat that process over and over again. Now, somewhere in time, this has evolved to fox, bobcats, and coyotes. Most people use it for coon or coyotes today. Now, when I'm reading this, I think you already know the answer to one of your questions, Jesse. And that's the way that you got your snare made. And I played with, and I still use kill poles to this day. Even though I call them that, but here in Tennessee, because the ground does not really freeze, it spins around. It's more like a live pole here than a kill pole. You could make it a kill pole by welding a washer on the bottom or something like that, but then they're hard to pull. I never really went to that effort. But so me, the kill pole is a kill pole because that's what the original person who come up with this concept, Ron Hansen, called it, even though for most of us it's not a kill pole. Now he's talking about, I believe, coyotes here. And you know, I'm looking at this email and I don't see that. So I'm making the assumption that it's for coyotes. So it's because the dirt hole next question asks for coyotes. But either way, if you're talking about coon with kill poles, a 3-foot rod, most people have modified this from the original version of the kill pole. It's not that the other one was bad or wrong or out of date. It's just harder to make them in volume for the trapper that's building them in a shop the way that I've done, by the washers and everything else. The way that I've done, if you can visualize this in your head, if it's a coon one, it's 3 foot long, or for fox it's 3 foot long, or even for sometimes for cats 3 foot long. If you take probably 2.5 foot piece of No. 9 annealed wire that you can get from any trap supply store. Don't go down and get the silver stuff from Tractor Supply, which I've done and it's a pain in the butt to deal with, so don't go there. Get the annealed wire, go in order and get it to come in. Take a pair of vice grips about 1/2 inch from the top of the pole and just squeeze the anneal wire on there. And then take a hammer and slide it up against where the wire is now sticking straight out and bend it over to a U so it looks like a horseshoe. So you bend that wire around the handle of that hammer. And you put another piece of ice grip, or you put another section of ice grip right there so you can pull your hammer out. So what you've got is a horseshoe that's on the side of your pole, almost at the very top. Tack weld right inside of where the vice grips are. And then you're gonna take that No. 9 annealed wire and you're gonna wrap that about 3 times around the pole pretty tight. What that does, it gives you a little bit of strength and it gives you spring. So when an animal's fighting the snare, if the whammy or your plastic collar doesn't come off real quick, it doesn't break that weld, because you can't really weld that No. 9 into the 1/2 inch or the 5/8 for the coyotes, where it's like a piece of laminate because it's soft metal. So that wrapping of that wire takes all that stress off that bottom one. That's the way that I do it. And I've seen all kinds of ways. I've seen where people, instead of using No. 9 wire on the top, they take a fence staple or something like that and wire that, then they'll wire their No. 9 and wrap it around. There's all kind of ways that you can do this. I've even got a YouTube video of this on Woofer Nation on my YouTube channel. You have to go back and search, and it shows the kill pole way I'm talking about doing it. But if you're talking about coon, 1.5 to 2 feet out of the ground is fine. Absolute fine. I wish we had a little more information on this one question, but we'll go over it as it's either one or the other. So a foot and a half, 2 foot out of the ground is fine. Snares are 40 inches long, that's great. Cam locks, slim locks, good locks, so you're good there. The snare wants to flip around and act all funky as a hang-em. That's because when you're using straight wire or straight cable and you put that on the top, then it's a short piece of cable and you try to run that into that whammy, yeah, you're going to get all kind of weirdness going on. Now, you can sit there a lot of times and play with it, take it off, put it back on, get it to work eventually. But to fix that's pretty simple. And to me, a snare for a kill pole, the correct way for all situations for any animal is set up the same way. I want about 12 inches with a loop on one end that goes to a swivel. It can be a snare swivel or a box swivel or a fishing swivel, makes no difference whatsoever. And that piece is the part that hooks onto the pole. And then you need to know what you're going to be snaring. Is it coons? Is it cats? Is it coyotes? Is it beaver? Is it otter? Is it mink? Whatever it's going to be. And then you have snares that are specifically for the animals. You know, I know as trappers, we want to have general stuff that'll work for everything. And I see that point, and I understand why people want to go that direction. But if you're going to get into snaring, especially if you're going to get into kill poles, which is going to put you a step above the way most people are looking at snaring, you need to know what you're going to set them for, which means you can go about this in a couple of different directions. You can have snares that are built specifically for coon, for beaver, for cats, and for coyotes. And then you'll have to have some way to carry them with you depending on what you're snaring. And so you can separate those out and hook them up. Now, one thing that I started doing probably 6 or 7 years ago that's really made a lot of sense to me once I started using this was I've got what I'm calling the pigtail. And that's about the 12 to 14 inches piece that's got the loop on one end and goes to a swivel. That pretty much stays on my snare most of the time up for 2 to 3, 4 years. That never comes off that kill pole. It's there all through the season, everything else. But what I'm doing is I'm having snares with me from the swivel and the loop end. So the way that you want to have these snares is you want to have the pigtail that goes to the pole. Then it goes to a swivel, and then you have your loop. And if as long as you have that swivel behind your loop, they're really quick to put in, and you don't have all this corkiness that happens with your snare. I know exactly what you're talking about. I've even had this problem when I tried to use fence snares, short fence snares on a fence, and using a snare support. I mean, you sit there and you fiddle with it, and you fiddle with it, and eventually you get mad and throw it off in the brush. And then you grab another one. And it's just the way that you put the ends on them. And they're not that you've done anything wrong. It's just the way it is. But what I've done by having the loops separate from the pigtail part on my kill poles is I can have on me, say, a dozen coon snare loops and coyote loops and beaver loops. But my kill poles have the pigtail already on it. So when I go set it up, I find my trail, whatever animal that is. I beat the pole in next to it with the re-rod, with my hammer. And then I will just take my pliers, and because I've got the swivel on there with a J-hook going through it, I'm using box swivels is what I use. Then I take my loop end, which is just a snare loop the size. And what I mean by that, if you don't know what I'm talking about, like for a coyote, you want a 14-inch loop. It may be 12 inches or 14 inches, but you need at least a 14-inch loop. So you're going to have a small loop end that you can put your J-hook through, and then you'll come down that and you'll see your lock, and you'll bring that up around onto the bottom, and that's where it goes back through the lock with your washers or your aluminum stops. So, like, and it saves me a lot of money when I do this. So let's say that I'm out there and I come across a coyote trail. I beat the snare pole in. I hook my loop to the pigtail that's on the pole, which is all just setting it through the J-hook and crimping it with my pliers. So that is set up. I put it through the, because of where I live and it doesn't get that cold here, I'm using the plastic tubing instead of the metal whammies. I push that in there, I adjust it over the loop, I maybe do a little bit of camouflaging if needed. That set is complete. Now when I come back and there's a coyote that's either wrapped up on the pole or wrapped off of something close to it, I take care of the coyote, I take the snare off of the coyote, I reach into my bag and I have another loop. And I just hook that loop back onto that kill pole for the next coyote to come down the line. And what that means to me as a snareman is at the beginning of the year, what happens, and this is coming from personal experience, guys, you're all excited about your what's coming up on the season. So you build coon snares and beaver snares and fox snares and cat snares and coyote snares. Or worse, you try to have a one snare fits all. But once you get past the one snare fits all phase in your life and you go to the more, you start getting a lot more technical with it, more professional in the way that you're doing this, that's a lot of different snares you're building. You've got the pigtails, you've got all those swivels, you've got all those stops, you've got everything together, but it's for one unit. And then when you catch something with that unit, you've got to take that unit completely out of the field, but you still have all that time in building that snare and the money for building that snare. But if you have your pigtails and then you have your loop ends, when you make a catch, most of the time with that snare, what's going to be beyond use is the loop, the part that catches the animal. So you can take that off just by opening the J-hook, put the new loop on there, and you're back in business. So that means if I'm going to run, let's just for an example say I'm going to run 100 snares. I'll make 100 snares from the get-go if I'm thinking coyotes. I'm going to have 100 coyote snares sitting there. But at the same time, if I'm going to run that for any amount of time, if I'm going to have 100 trails set up, I'm going to need more than 100 snares. Now this is where the issue comes in with the kill poles. Or any snare for that matter, really. If I think I'm going to make so many catches and I'm going to catch some coon or whatever else in there by accident, if I need 200 snares to get me through the season in reality, that means I've got to make 200 real full snares. But by having a swivel with a box swivel and a J-hook, I can make 100 regular snares and 100 loops. So my cost, my time, and my energy is less on the loops than it is if I build 100 complete snares. That's kind of what I'm getting at. And no matter which loop end I use, it has to have a swivel on it for work in my system. And you don't have the headaches of having cables that don't want to hang right. Because when you have that swivel in there and you put it on your whammy or your plastic tubing, no matter what you do, there's no pressure coming from the pigtail, which is held secure by the rebar. So, I mean, I'm hoping I'm making that clear on that. Saves a lot of time, saves you a lot of money, and it really works good in the field. Because most of the time, I can probably make 8, 10, 12 catches off of pigtail before it just gets too bad to use. And when especially with coyotes, when you have a 14-inch loop, when it goes down on the animal, you're talking probably about, if you go across from loop to loop, about 3 inches. 4 inches at the most if you're way up north and you have really big coyotes. So you have 4 inches. When that coyote goes to turn and start biting on the cable, he's biting between the cable of the lock and the swivel. He very rarely bites from the swivel back. He may chew on your pole a little bit, but you hardly ever have any chewing on the behind the swivel. So that means you can reuse it over and over and over again. So the system of making loops and pigtails works really good. And even if I'm not using kill poles, just thinking about snares in general, if I'm making 14-foot snares or 12-foot snares is what I run a lot of, if I'm in big timber like I am here in the mountains of Tennessee, I can take all these extensions and whatever I think I'm going to be trapping for, but I may have in my pack 12 coon snares, 12 beaver snares, 12 fox snares, and 12 coyote snares. But I don't have all the bulk or the cost doing it. So if I'm walking down a creek or get out of the truck and I'm looking at a bridge or a wood line or something like that, I take out the loop end that meets the need that's going to be the most productive for the animal that I'm sitting for. And if you're thinking, okay, well, if you're going to go about it that way, well, why don't we just make a snare for everything? And it's because of the end of year income from snaring. Snaring's got a bad reputation. And I'm not talking from the ignorant eggheads of the anti-movement. I'm talking about from fur damage. Most of the fur damage that's going to come from snares is because people do what most snare makers do, and that's put the swivel on the end of the snare. When you put the swivel on the end of the snare, the first time that booger wraps up around a post, a tree, a piece of bramble or something like that, it completely takes all of the swiveling out of the snare. Having your swivel on the end of that snare is a bad choice for someone that's going to be selling fur. Because as soon as that gets wrapped up or bound up, the cable no longer can rotate. But if you have your loop end that actually goes around the head of the animal and then the snare and then the extension part of the pigtail, that animal can rotate and it doesn't put pressure on that animal. The big damage comes from snaring is where you lose your swiveling and you get a tourniquet effect because the cable starts binding up and it starts kinking up. And as that kinking happens, it gets tighter and tighter and tighter and it's unforgiving. And you start binding in, you start ripping hair out and stuff like that. And that's where the worst part of this comes from. So if you're thinking about getting into snaring, think about never ever having your swivel on the end. It sounds good. I know why people do it. It's easier to make them that way. It's half the time. You have less parts. I know why people that sell snares do that. I get it. But from a functioning performance part of your snaring and the end result of you selling that fur, it's a bad deal. And that comes from personal experience. When you get the swivel up close to the animal, a lot, even on beaver, a lot of times I've sold hundreds and hundreds of beaver that's been snared and the fur buyer didn't know if he was in a snare or a body grip. You do that with a standard snare with a swivel on the end, it's going to be obvious that you snared it and you're going to get docked for it. The same goes with raccoons. Part of the reason I like the kill pole system where I live, where it's not going to be frozen ground and it's not a quote kill system, is with beaver, coons, coyotes, anything else, because the pole can rotate. It acts like another swivel on the animal. So as the animal goes in a circle, he will rotate the whole kill pole or the re-rod stake at the same time. And it'll allow him just to go in circles like a dog on a leash. And you don't get hardly any damage that way. That's part of the reason I've done so well with 116 snares on beaver. They just don't have a way to kink it up unless I put them in entanglement. If I catch them out in the open with a swivel close to the body and the pole's rotating in a sandbar, they can run around forever. And the cable is hardly ever tight. It's just tight enough to hold them, which is kind of what we're wanting. Now, getting back to the kill pole thing. Now, if we're talking coyotes, Jesse, you really need to have, at a minimum, the top of your snare at 2.5 feet out of the ground. So most coyotes, that are used with kill poles are guys that use them a long time. They have 5 foot, 5/8 inch rebar for their kill poles. And I haven't done it because I haven't come across it yet. But after looking at some short pieces that I've come across, for weight issues, I would look at 3/4 inch fiberglass rod or 1 inch fiberglass rod, which would be a whole lot lighter than rebar. But it wouldn't bend. They couldn't chew through it, and you could carry more of them. Just a thought there, just a, you know, whatever. But for couch, you need that thing to be about 2.5 feet out of the ground. So if you've got a 5 foot pole and you've never used kill poles before, I know exactly what your brain's doing right now, because that's exactly what mine did. It's exactly what everybody's brain does the first time they use a kill pole. You've got a 5 foot rod, you've got it 2.5, 3 feet out of the ground, which means you only have 2 feet in the ground. You got your snare, it's hooked to the top of the pole, and you're worried that the coyote's gonna pull it out. And this is probably not talking to Jesse here, but just somebody that's out there never really thought about using kill poles or heard of them before. The reason a kill pole on a coyote needs to be that tall is because the coyote is pulling down on the pole. If he's pulling down on the pole, he can't jack the pole up. If you put a coyote on a snare on a regular re-rod stake that's 2 foot, and you put it in the ground, it'll take him all of about 10 minutes to pull your whole stake system and be gone. With a kill pole, the worst that can happen is he can bend the pole over a little bit, but he still can't get it out. Now, if he was a human, which he's not, he could reach over pretty much at any time, unless it's frozen ground, I mean solid frozen ice ground, and take his little paws and pull it out of the ground. But luckily for us, they're not that smart. They don't think like humans do. So just because, and the reason I'm telling you this, if you've never used kill poles, you'll go up to a coyote and, you know, he's worked that thing to death and he's twisted it around in that hole probably 5,000 times. And you go over there, and after you dispatch the coyote, you can take 2 fingers and gently pull the whole pole out of the ground. But a coyote has no leverage to do that because it's always pulling down from the top where the snare's hooked to the ground. So all he's trying to do is pull it sideways. And you've got that 2 foot of 5/8 rebar, he can't bend that much. And I've had coyotes where I've caught coyotes on 1/2 inch rebar that I've bent it over like at, I don't know, 30 degrees. I mean, way below 45 degrees. And they still can't get it out. So that's not really an issue if you've never used them, but you want them to have them up. And but the swivels are the biggest thing. Okay, the next question he's got is dirt holes. Are different style dirt holes for coyotes more effective in different parts of the country? Some of my trapping buddies just wobble a hole with a driver and whack and stack coyotes. Looks unnatural as hell, but they like the coyotes? I think that's just miscommunication. Maybe the coyotes like them. It drives me bonkers because I'll try a Charlie Robbins dirt hole or a flat set. Looks a lot more natural and not the same result. What's the difference? Or does it really matter with a coyote? Is there a place for certain dirt holes? Is it whatever floats your boat, or maybe the set just sucks and I need better practice? You know, this is one of those things. It comes a lot with, well, the first answer, and are the different dirt holes different in different parts of the country? Absolutely. I don't know why that is. I can't explain why that is, but it just is. You know, when, and I'll give you some state examples here. What I've seen in Michigan is the little wobble holes seem to do better. Now, and I would say almost to the same point in North Carolina, where I've trapped there doing predator control work. somewhat in South Carolina, but I actually had better luck with a Charlie Robbins dirt hole set over there. Here in Tennessee, I can tell you, bigger's better. In Texas, you either need to go completely James Bond on them where they don't know you're there, or you need to make it big and ugly and nasty where NASA's wondering what's happening in Texas. That's kind of where you need to be there. And you talk to certain people in different states and it becomes clear there is a difference. So what does that mean for a trapper? Well, if you're somewhere new, for one, you can't hold on to what you think it should be. I personally have a hard time with wobble holes. I don't like them. But if the coyotes tell me that's what they like, well, I'm going to be wobbling away with the best of them. So you have to, as a trapper, figure out what it is in your area that works. So if you're going to, say you're going to a new place, the first thing that I normally do, especially with coyote control, is one, I'm thinking pups, and two, I want to see what's going to happen. So when I first roll through a property the first day, I'm putting in big, basically Charlie Robbins dirt hole sets. I'll make big messes. They'll look like groundhogs. If I'm out west, they'll look more like badgers. I still want them to be natural, but I want them to be big. One of that, and keep in mind, I've done so much predator control that my brain works that way now, is I want the pups to investigate really quick, and I want them out of the way. Just because of mass volume, and it makes the customer happy. But at the same time, if I roll through somewhere for fur trapping, and I go with bigger dirt holes and flat sets, which is normally what I'm doing, and the flat sets catch and the big dirt holes don't, it doesn't take me about 4 or 5 days till I'll start toning those down till I figure out wherever that sweet spot is. Because for whatever reason, different areas have different sweet spots. And you just got to figure out what that is. And so if your buddies are whacking and stacking coyotes with wobble holes, I would wobble right next to them and not think anything about it. It's not really what you as a trapper think is right or wrong or the best or the right way of doing something. It's in whatever is going on in those little coyote heads is what you've got to deal with. You've got to listen to the coyotes and follow what they're telling you. They will tell you how to catch them if you'll listen to them. The problem is most trappers won't listen to the coyotes. They won't listen to, or they won't observe enough of what's going on around them, and they have their way, and by God, I'm going to do my way no matter what. And in my opinion, that's a sorry way to be a trapper, because the trapper's job is to catch the coyote. The coyote will tell you how to catch it. So if you listen to it and you do what it says, and it's kind of like that old saying I say, you know, if you have a dogma like a big dirt hole or you don't like wobble holes, karma will eventually run you over. It'll run your dogma over. So don't get hooked into one thing. And I doubt seriously that it sucks. I mean, it took me about 3 years to figure out Texas coyotes to the point where I know now what I need to do. Like in Texas, in North Alabama's the same way. If I've got any type of spoil pile where there's any dirt mounds whatsoever, like where the road graders pushed up dirt, stuff like that, if I put in a big nasty dirt hole, it wears coyotes out. Hands down. Now, I've been in places where, I mean, you put those sets in one after the other because they're readily available, and they're actually easier to make, and they're better on the rain and all that other stuff, but the coyotes just don't pay any attention. You know, after 4 or 5 days, if you don't get any action whatsoever, back off, reevaluate, start toning down on your dirt holes. But what I found out most of the time, if you've got to start toning down those dirt holes, you really don't need the hole. Most people will do like wobble sets, and it depends on who's doing this and what it actually looks like. Most of the time, a wobble set is basically a flat set. I mean, there is a hole technically, and I do that with quotation marks, technically there's a hole, but it's at the base of a piece of grass. If any of the dirt moves whatsoever, it's not really a hole. It's just a way to get your lure underground, possibly. I bet you in a situation like that, you could just smear grass or bait on the grass clump or the log and have the same results. And if that's the case, and you don't like putting in wobble holes for whatever reason, which I don't know why, it just bothers me, but I'll go strictly more to flat sets, and you'll figure that out. And it could be even times of year. You'll find out earlier in the season, especially when you have more pups, the more showier stuff seems to do better. Later in the year, when they start getting a little more mature and they start thinking about finding a girlfriend and territories and everything like that, you need to start most of the time backing off of the big showy stuff and kind of toning it down a little bit more, and you'll have more of an even kill on your catch. But I will always, if I go to a predator control job and it's say 2,000 acres and it's January, and I know the coyotes are getting close to breeding season, and you know they may have had some competition around me or whatever it is, my showier stuff probably goes down to about 10%, and the more lower stuff that's as far as visibility goes gets a lot higher, you know. And then I'll also start going into a lot more of the blind sets, which we'll get into in a minute for another question. You know, does it really matter to the cow? Yeah. If he's not working what you're doing, it matters to him for some reason. You know, you don't have to understand why he does it. It's kind of like, you know, all these crazy Muslims and ISIS. I don't have to understand why they're being the way that they are. I just need to know what they're doing, and if you ever get around one, what you need to do about it, period. You know, we try to get a little bit too much in the coyote's head, and they're telling you right off the bat that they're not very interested in what you're doing, so you just switch. No big deal. And then he's got on the bottom, "I've learned to be a wolf and not a sheep, so I'd like to be following, so I don't like following the herd all the time, so a little stubborn and giving into what everybody else is doing." And I totally get that. You know, he didn't want to follow the herd, but sometimes it depends on what herd you're with. Let me put it that way. If you're with a herd and they're catching coyotes consistently in your area by doing a specific technique, then the herd is right. And if you look at it, well, you just want to be different than them so you can say or show or be different in some aspect just to be different, and it hurts your production, it's not very productive. I totally get not wanting to be like everybody else. And I, you know, a little stubborn, I'm right there with you, brother, 100% on that one. But at the same time, sometimes the herd or parts of that herd have been dealing with those coyotes long enough. They may have already went through what you're going through by going bigger, doing this, doing that, and they kind of find that sweet spot. And it's not so much following the herd at that point, because I promise you, if you're dealing with someone that's catching a lot of coyotes in an area, you're not dealing with a herd anyway. And that's probably somebody that you need to emulate. Thanks for your time. Hope you have a great season. My wife caught her first red fox. Kudos to her. We caught 18 coons just this a.m. Got to go sharpen the skin and knives. Congratulations, man. That's what it's all about. We're going to go to the next question. And this is for Michael. It says, I just purchased your Eastern Wolfer book and really enjoyed it. I also purchased your Coyote Locations of Produce video. In your book, you mentioned pods of advanced urine. I'm going to reveal my inexperience here, but what exactly are these pods? That's one of those things that, as good as it is, it just didn't market very well, so I quit doing it. And I have no qualms about telling everybody what this is. The biggest part of urine that can be an issue on a trapper is it's water-based. Water-based and rain do not get along very well. Water-based and any type of low humidity does not get along. So, I mean, just think about that. If you're somewhere out west, it can evaporate very quickly. If you're somewhere like Louisiana or Mississippi or Tennessee or Georgia, you get so much rain that it dilutes what you're doing. And what the pods of advanced urine is just what I was calling this. The advanced urine, if you go online and you Google water gel, you will see there's several different kinds of water gel, but what you're looking for, and it's actually an agricultural product, and what it is, it absorbs water, and the good stuff will absorb it about 800 times per the particle size of the water gel that you get. And for urine, I would get probably the biggest one you can get, and most of them, depending on the company that you buy them from, they're not that expensive. I think a pound or two probably costs like $20. But a pound or two of that stuff, when you add liquid to it, it'll grow to probably 10 gallons worth of size. I mean, it's like the ever-expanded man. I mean, so what you do with your urine, which are these are water gel pods, they're sodium-based. They will break down after... If you leave them in direct sun, they'll break down in about 10 days. If you've got them like in the bottom of a hole or under grass or the edge of a log or something like that, or in the deep woods, you'll get about 30 days before they start breaking down. And actually the ultraviolet sun is what breaks these things down. So all they are is water gel. That's what the advanced urine is, just what I call it. But the pods are those water gel pieces. So you got to kind of play around with what you're doing. So you take a percentage of urine, say like for a gallon, you probably only need about, I don't know, less than a cup, probably half a cup of these things. You put them in a jug and you just pour the urine in it. And over the next 3 or 4 hours, it'll turn into, looks kind of like jelly, but not the consistency of jelly. It won't be water anymore consistency. It'll be like a sludge, basically. And what you're shooting for, if you have sludge only on half the jug or whatever the volume is that you're using, add a little more crystals. And you don't want to add more crystals because you're wasting money, but you kind of get a percentage down once you play with it a while, depending on the volume that you're doing. I never did it in a gallon size, so I really don't know what that is, and that's what most people would use, but it's not very much. But you want it to where it just holds all the urine in there. So when you go to pour it out, the only thing that comes out now is this stuff that looks like... they're like little bitty rubbery pellets, basically. And then you go use that at your set. But the cool thing about these, if you've never used the water gel in the urine, is it doesn't evaporate at the same rate whatsoever. So if you've got someone that's trapping with you and they're going to put out regular urine, and they spray urine out, and it's, you know, the sun's coming out some, it's raining some, all that stuff that goes on a regular trap line, the true mass of the volume of the urine they put down dwindles very quickly every hour, basically, that it's out there. when you use these gels and you mix that up and you no longer put it in a liquid form and you put some of that down a hole or up under a grass clump or something like that, you have the same consistency of fresh urine for about 10 days. And that's a big deal when you're talking to a coyote or a fox or a bobcat, because it has the potency of the, just like you put it out, just like another animal just peed on it. So that's the reason for what that is. So if you're looking to make the advanced urine like I used to sell, that's all it is water gel in the urine. Now, this stuff will freeze. Those pods will definitely freeze. So if you're going to be somewhere that's really cold, you'll need to kind of keep them, treat them like fish oil or something like that, where they're in the front of the truck or whatever, because it'll turn the urine into a rock and you won't be able to get it out of the jug if it gets too cold for too long. It actually keeps from freezing quicker, but when it does freeze, it really freezes. So, you know, keep that in mind. I wouldn't add salt or anything to it because it's already salt-based and you could really mess up if it works or not. But it's a cool thing to go try, you know, and to me it's easier to use, because one thing I've never liked about urine, when you go to use it, it ends up in your bag, it ends up on your hands, it ends up everywhere except sometimes where you want it to be. And with the gels, you can put them in, say, like a pint jar. You got the same pint of odor, but it's actually stronger because none of it's leaving, than you do in a pint of liquid. And then you can just take a spoon or a stick and just flip it where you want it to go, and it's done. And it'll be just as strong after 10 days as it is the moment you put it on there, which you don't have with regular urine. So that's what the water gels are. And if that helps you up, helps you out a little bit, man, I hope it does. I took up coyote trapping. This is the other part of his email, because this is just really cool. I took up coyote trapping for the first time this year at the age of 54. Well, congratulations, man. You're now living. A big reason for that is because I was motivated to learn and listen from your trapping radio program. You're a great source of inspiration. So last month I gave it a try, took several days off work, and managed to catch 3 coyotes in the Upper Peninsula. Here's a photo of my first coyote. I was pumped to say the least. I'm hoping I can get his picture on that you'll be able to see that up on the show notes there. Congratulations, 3 coyotes in Upper Peninsula. That is no feat to laugh at whatsoever up there. Those are hard coyotes to catch. And congratulations, man, 54 years old, first time going coyote trapping. Outstanding. We're going to go to the next question. And it is coyote help. This is going to be a little tougher. I'm going to answer, there's this question, I'm going to read another email and we're going to kind of get into this. It seems like it's coyote day today, but I live in the foothills, North Carolina. I'm 15, my third year trapping. I met you at the NTA Crossbowl in Tennessee. I like to trap pretty much whatever's out there, but I really like predators. I listen to trap radios and use your lures and bait. I've caught some bobcats, but no coyotes. I've done everything right, in quotation marks, to catch them, but it's not working out. I've made my sets more natural, and I get that. I use more dirt holes, but this year I'm gearing more towards flat sets because of the rain. My trap locations usually consist of intersections, trails, or roads. Last year I only used 1 trap per set and was using a generic 9 inches and 3 inch trap placement. This year I'm using 2 per set, like you say, and I do not follow a strict code anymore. I'm looking at how the coyote enters the set. I use big traps with big pans, and I don't think bedding traps is an issue. I bed them rock solid. My problem is the coyotes are not coming to my sets. Excuse that I keep telling myself for this reason, I'm not catching coyotes because of how long I can leave my sets out. Since my parents are divorced And the longest I can leave my sets out is 4 days. Going back to the excuse, the reality is I must be missing something in knowledge. I know the coyotes will eventually go to your sets, but I need a fast set to catch them, and this is why I'm here. I plan on starting my own trapping business in the future. I like it, entrepreneur in the making. I'll sign up for business classes next year and take an online course to help me be successful. Knowing you probably have more emails than you can read, I will stop here. Thank you for your service to our country. I've become the greatest trapper I can be. Man, Christian, you, as long as you got that attitude, you have nothing to worry about. And I'm going to read another one really quick, and then I'm going to kind of mix these two together. I bought your yoke dope from fntpost.com, hoping it would end my dry spell. I'm in trapping in southeast Idaho in prime coyote country and bobcat country. The dogs just walk by without stopping. What am I doing wrong? Most of my setups are vert hole sets with some flat sets. So you've got these two questions right here. And you've got someone going out, and they're setting sets, and they're doing what they think it needs to be done. And the coyotes are just not playing with them. Now, I definitely don't know. I've never trapped in Idaho. I don't know that much about Idaho. If you're in the mountains, just from my personal experience, you're going to have a rough time. I would definitely go down a little bit till you start hitting some of the floor of the valleys. And a lot of times that'll definitely... Seems like the coyotes seem to work stuff better. Let me see if I can tell where this other one is at. No, it doesn't have where he... Oh, North Carolina. So you got North Carolina, you have Idaho. Well, this is a tough one, guys, because I get these emails all the time. And I wish... I mean, this is one of those things I wish that I had an answer for that was concrete, and I just don't. Unless someone could be with you and see with your setting, and a lot of times it's going to be location-based, it's really hard to give an answer on this. But I will say, for the guy in Idaho, and I don't know, like I said, you're way north of me, and when coyotes start reacting more to gland lures here, it's usually January, but the farther north you go, the quicker they get into looking for girlfriends and stuff like that. So I don't know where that's going to be. Yoke dope is a hyper gland lure, and I use it year round, but never kind of just by itself. And my recommendation would be for the guy in Idaho is, if the dirt holes aren't working, first question is, what kind of dirt holes are you using? If they're big, ugly, and nasty, I would go smaller. If you're having a big dirt pattern, I may go with a very small dirt pattern or no dirt pattern, or use the dirt pattern as a decoy and have your trap blended off to the side. I do that a lot. And that a lot of times that'll seem to help. But if the big and nasty dirt holes aren't getting it done, then I would definitely choke those down and make them smaller. You know, maybe go to the wobble hole thing, or just a 2-inch hole or something like that. Out west, if I was guessing, I have a feeling those coyotes are going to work better on flat sets than they are dirt holes. The farther west you go, for whatever reason, the less appeal a dirt hole has on coyotes. I don't quite understand it. Don't know why the reason is. Don't have to. And when you really look at the old woofers that came from northern Montana and Oregon and all these states around you, what you'll find is almost exclusively they were flat setters. Just like Johnny Thorpe found out in California, Gray Fox out there won't even work a dirt hole. Don't know why. But once he figured out, he started nailing them. And so maybe you should go to way more flat sets. But I would say, as early as it is, it's November here. And I know, if you're, especially if you're at elevation out in Idaho, you probably, you know, you may be starting in October 15th. One thing that I've noticed a lot of coyote trappers miss is bait when they're setting for coyotes. Now, where bait kind of falls short is when you're in dead breeding season, which, like for here, is normally January. I would say for you, it's probably still going to be early January, maybe very late December. But up until that point, bait's really important. And if I'm making a coyote set, not that I know everything or not that I'm right all the time by any stretch of the imagination, if I've got a choice between bait or lure, I'm going to use bait, a good bait. It can be natural or it can be commercial, but it needs to be bait. Then I will add lure or gland lure or urine on top of that. But bait over just lure, and especially just a gland lure. Even though the yolk dope's got extras in it besides just glands, I would definitely head that more towards bait. But that's a really... that's a tough one. I mean, because it's one of those things that, you know, back when I was doing a lot of the predator control, I was doing a lot in the Ozarks of Missouri. And after about 3 years, I made the business decision that I would no longer take clients in the Ozarks of Missouri. And the reason was, no matter what I did, how hard I worked, how many traps I put out, finding the best locations, everything I could to scratch and dig to catch coyotes. The population and the movement of those coyotes were as such that on a 10-day or 14-day contract, the way that I do my stuff, I would only have maybe one night, if I was lucky, that those coyotes would come through that property. And if you're in elevation out in Idaho, you may be running into that where you get, you know, depressed may not be the right word, but you get kind of down and out because of that. And it's just not a very quick thing, you know, and that I really don't know, you know, the best way to do. The yolk dope, though, I will tell you, it's going to work better once the coyotes start thinking about girlfriends. Absolutely. It is a good lure to add as a backup to bait or with another lure because it does add a lot of intrigue to a set. There's no doubt about that. But I would go to bait. And whatever you're doing now with your dirt holes, kind of go the other direction. And then see if that happens. And I have a feeling, though, that when you start going to more flat sets like you're talking about, if you really blend those in and they're really natural and they're right on the travel ways of the coyotes, I have a feeling your catch is going to pick up. You know, and another thing you got to take into consideration, how many coyotes are actually there. And because no matter what you do, if they're not there very often, you're not going to be able to catch a whole lot of them. And I wish I had more advice for Idaho. I just don't know that much about it, especially if you're up in the mountains, because I have a feeling it's a lot more sporadic up there than it would be if you could move down a little bit to the floor, like I said. I think you'd be a lot better off. Now, for Christian in North Carolina, this is my recommendation to you, man. And it's going to be hard to do this. You would be better off on a 4-day only check. What I would say, at least the first year, I want you to do me a favor. Flat sets or dirt holes counts as 50%. The other 50% of your sets needs to be blind sets. And the reason for that is coyotes just by nature have a tendency to walk by sets. Now there's tricks you can do to get them to slow down. I've got a product that I use myself. I don't know if I'm going to put it on the market or not. It's called Coyote Stop, and it's like a trailing set for coyotes. I don't know if I have enough really to put it on the market, but it's something that can slow them down. And you can come up with something like this on your own, and an easy one is something like taking mice and putting them in water. This is no Bill Nelson thing. You put them in water and you just let them just rot in the water pretty much, and it gets really stinky. And then you can actually spray that across the travelway or trail or road. And what happens is a coyote will hit that no matter what the wind is doing. And it kind of starts tripping his triggers a little bit on what he should be doing as a predator. All of a sudden he's going along and he's smelling pine and this and the dirt, and he's looking for movement, and all of a sudden, bam, right in his face. I mean, just fills his nostril up. There's death that just happened here. And, using the mice is a pretty simplistic way to go. It does work to some extent. I will tell you that. I played around with that. It works. There's stuff that's better. But that is an easy one that you can do. Catch you some mice, throw it in some water, wait till it just stinks to high heaven, put it in a jar, and you can go out and use it. But the reason I'm telling you, Christian, that you should go with flat sets, coyotes just by nature. And we as human beings think we can conquer and outsmart and force animals to do what we want to do. And the problem is they have no idea we're in the area. And our will doesn't mean very much to those animals. I think you're going to be better off since you're getting away from a standard formula and you're going to start thinking about how the coyote's going to work the set. There's a learning curve to trapping that way. No doubt you'll be way better off once you start playing around with that. And you'll pick that up, no doubt. When you see a miss, you can start figuring stuff out. And you'll be better off that way. But the reason I'm saying going with the blind sets, and that's nothing but a trap in a trail that's blended where it looks like nothing's there. Better yet is a two trail blind set where you have two traps. And to get this picture, stop the podcast, go out and get two traps. Cool springs are going to be the easiest. Come back and listen to what I'm getting ready to say. I want you to lay those two traps down on a table. Now I want you to rotate those two traps until the springs of those coil springs are just barely touching. Not one over or under the other, but I want you to slide the springs of those two traps together. When you go out and you're putting these blind sets in, what you need to find is a trail that's got cow tracks in it, a cattle trail, a deer trail, somewhere, and the best ones are the old roads where no one's driving down them anymore, where they actually have trails. And I want you to, since you can see those two traps on your table in front of you right now, where you got them set down next to each other and the springs are almost touching. I mean, you just have enough for a piece of paper to go through the levers, that's what I'm trying to think of. The levers are almost touching. I want you to look at that. And then I want you to pretend that whichever way you've got that, the trail is going to go from the outside lever to the inside lever to the other trap's lever to the outside of the other trap's lever. So I want you to, if you pick those up together, that's a single unit. And you want the animal to step over the lever onto the trap. So when you go out to your trail that you find, And the more you do this, the better you'll get at finding trails. It's not going to be an instant thing. There's a learning curve with everything, and that's what makes good trappers really good as they go through this learning curve. You want to put that in the trail where the animal's going to have to step over one of those levers. Now, I want you to bed those traps in that trail. I want you to bed them in really solid. And then I want you to find a small stick, and right where those levers are almost touching, I want you to wiggle that small stick down to where the levers are literally touching the sides of that stick. And I'm talking a little stick. And then I want you to sift over those traps, and I want you to blend it in with the duff so it looks like nothing's there. Now you've got this, now it looks like there's nothing there but this little bitty stick sticking up. And you need, and here's where the kicker for this set is. You need to look for coyote, fox, or bobcat scat. House dog scat. I don't care what it is. Anybody that you know that has house cats, go volunteer to change their kitty litter box. What you need, dude, is a turd. Period. Now, where you're going to put that turd is very important. Where that stick is down dead center of those two levers of the trap, you're going to see that stick, and I want you to pull the stick out of the dirt and set the scat right where you took the stick out. And that is a very basic mafia set. Don't add lure, don't add urine, don't add anything. Walk away. If you'll put out 50% of your sets and get really good at putting that two trap trail set in, I promise you, if you've got coyotes and you're seeing tracks in those trails, you will catch coyotes. And the neat thing about that set, unlike a lured or a baited set, the coyote does not have to be interested at that moment in your set. It just has to be on the trail. Because when the coyote's going down that trail, it's not going to step in the poop. It's going to step over the poop. So whichever way that it's walking, when it steps over the poop, it's going to be in the next trap. You don't know which way he's going to come is the reason to use two traps. And the reason it's called the mafia set, because you're giving him something he can't refuse. And I would even recommend this for the gentleman in Idaho. Start going to more of these two-setted blind sets. You will be amazed what you catch. Because and I've had so many students that come here, and I do this almost to everyone, and you would think is, and I know I've said this before on the show. You see the trail, it's not wide. You see the tracks in the trail. They see the tracks in the trail. There's no question where the coyote's walking at. And you tell them, how do we catch this coyote? And then they grab their bag and they go a foot or two off the trail and they put in their set of choice. Now, what just happened in the real world of trapping? The trapper just made a set that's going to have the animal go out of his way and do something to get caught. The two-setted blind set or the mafia set, and I didn't come up with that. That's from Craig O'Gorman. But that mafia set idea, if the coyote's in the trail, he doesn't have to be in the mood to work bait, or he doesn't have to be hungry to eat bait, or he didn't have to be horny to go over and smell gland lure or pee on a bush. If he's in the trail, he's caught. And I think a lot of times as trappers, we think in things of terms that we normally do when it comes to everything else in life. We can make it better. I don't know if that'll work, so I'm gonna go over and put this really stinky stuff and he can't handle it and he's gotta come over and do it. The best thing about the blind set is the coyote's doing what he's normally doing, where he's normally doing it at, and there's really no defense he has against a blind set. No defense whatsoever, because he's not having to change his habit. He just has to be there. And really with a 4-day catch or the 4-day check, the way that you're dealing with, most coyote sets aren't going to really become active till 36 hours. That only gives you 1 day. But with a blind set, they're just as active the moment you leave as it is when you pull them in 4 days. Because if a coyote comes down that trail, he's almost certainly caught. When I was used to trap with Daisy, that's the only set I could not use if I took her. She'd be in it in 5 minutes. I could put all the dirt holes and flat sets I want, and she could live there and never get caught. She had no defense against a turd in the middle of a trail. There's nothing unnatural about it. There's nothing that makes them do anything out of the unusual besides walk there, and then they're just plain caught. But I know, especially at 15, you want to think you can force something to happen. If you want to force something to happen, you have to let go of thinking you can control this a little bit and then back off of it and just let it happen. And that's where the blind set happens. And what you'll find out when you start setting these blind sets, and I've said this before, you will be amazed at how much fur you catch, but you'll never know exactly what it is. And the reason I'm telling you that, if you find a really good trail that's got a lot of tracks in it, you better put 3 or 4 of these sets in there 15, 20, 30 feet apart. Because what'll happen, if there's a big movement of animals, you may have a coon, a fox, a coyote, and a coyote. Or 2 possums, a coon, and a coyote. Or a fox, a bobcat, and a coyote, and a possum. You don't know what's going to happen. But if you run a lot of these, your catch is automatically going to go up. Now, why don't most trappers do this? For one, you have to slow down, and you can't force or horse your way into making this set work. You've got to be like an artist when you do this. When I say blended, I mean blended, not something that stands out. So sit back and look at it, and then when you leave, if the turd's gone, you need to have a hard time finding it. Honestly, that's what you're looking for. But if you do that, your 4-day check all of a sudden becomes irrelevant because all you need him to do is come down the trail. And I hope that helps you out, because that's one of the most deadly sets. Some of the biggest catches back in the 80s from some of the biggest name trappers. And I know in the 80s to someone that's 15, they're going to think that's ancient history. But some of the biggest name guys that had some of the biggest catches that some of you still see today on their catch pictures that they sell lure with was caught with a blind set. So that's the way I'm going to leave kind of tonight, thinking about how important that blind set is if you go to use it. And what you'll find out when you really get to know some of these old guys that caught some of these big pictures that are still looked at today, they were running 300 and 400 of these. And they were flat wearing fur out. Flat wearing it out. In big numbers. I'm talking a realistic 300 to 400 coyotes. Blind sets. Summer, winter, fall. That's what they were doing. And I'm telling you, if you go that route, Christian, you'll be excited about checking traps after the first couple of checks, because you don't know what you're going to catch, but you're going to catch. And the coyotes have no defense against that set. It's the only set that a coyote has no defense against. Snare is probably second to that. Being in North Carolina, I think there's only a few counties that you can snare in. But even a snare doesn't hold a candle to a mafia set. And a well-placed mafia set will absolutely, hands down, unequivocally beat the brains out of any flat set or dirt set that's ever been put in the ground if it's in the right spot and it's blended in and it's on location. Well, I need to go to bed, guys. It's late. I've enjoyed talking. I've got a little bit of fun I'm going to do now. For some reason, Chip is highly musical inclined, and he's got his version of what a trapper should listen to. And I kind of like different music, just like I like different things in life. So, for Chip, I've got a little song about Tennessee that he should really, really, really listen to all the words for. And I'm going to finish up with that. Hope y'all are having a great season. If it hadn't started yet, guys, it's coming soon. And go out and have a blast. Enjoy yourself. And remember what it's all about. And I'll talk to y'all later. Bye.
It's a party over here. Bring your people to the other side. Take them back roads. You might wanna bring your other ride. Big chrome wheels, custom paint, that ain't cutting it. Nobbies with the mud flaps, we be on some other shit. Couple hundred cattle and a barn full of southern cat. You can't tell me nothing about barbecue and both of that. Meet me in the middle, tea, and show you how we crop it up. Hang it in a barn, let it cure to that proper stuff. Chattanooga shine got me feeling like super smoke. Another shot, hit the perk, now we super blown. I be in the chicken coop, who's going chicken hunting? Catch me on the YouTube if you wanna learn you something about this simple southern country boy out of Tennessee. Hit me up on MySpace if you wanna get at me. Right around the corner, there's a perfect place for you and me. We all call it home, but you can call it Tennessee. Rolling on them back roads, blowing pine, sipping on that moonshine all the time. Party in the backyard, yours or mine. Hey, either way, we just kicking it in Tennessee. Rolling on them back roads, blowing pine, sipping on that moonshine all the time. Party in the backyard, yours or mine. Hey, either way, we just kicking it in Tennessee.
Now if you can't shoot it, race it, sleep with it, or eat it. Down here in Middle Tennessee, you just don't need it. Rabbit trapping 112 gauge in the other hand. And if you don't love this country boy, find another man. Need me a mid-10 thoroughbred chick that can eat a Granny Smith apple through a picket fence. Make me dream about it, won't quit. 4 days she's fine as a frog hair split. 4 ways fresh cut like a hayfield. Know what I mean? Have you ever seen a country boy so damn clean? John Deere tractor, four-wheeler or a backhoe. Working on a farm or rolling down a back road. Looking for a country gal with a lot of street smarts. Spend a couple thousand of my money down at Walmart. Thick-legged, big booty, sweet like tea. Baby girl, let's go carve our initials in a tree. Then we're rolling on them back roads, blowing pine, sipping on that moonshine all the time. Party in the backyard, it's yours or mine. Either way, we just kicking it in Tennessee. Rolling on them back roads, blowing pine, sipping on that moonshine all the time. Party in the backyard, it's yours or mine. Either way, we just kicking it in Tennessee.
Big ass white boy, boss of the dirt roads. Fruit, wine, and sticky, I can get it by the truckload. Sipping on fire water, smoking on a hog leg. Rubbing on a southern belle, chewing on a frog leg. About 100 youngins at the barbecue at noontime. After the sunset, it's straight to the moonshine. Single barrel, shoddy fishing pole, and a coon hound. Capable of turning any city to a boomtown. Smooth Tennessee cat, the type that you love to hate. Slick as goat spit, tough as $2 pig steak. Dogs on the porch, coveralls on the clothesline. I be taking care of things, tell me when it's go time. Better come correct when you step on my grass. Let your mouth write a check that your ass can't cash. Round up 100 honkies with just one whistle. With a buzz like that, I don't even need a pistol. Rolling on them back roads, blowing pine, sipping on that moonshine all the time. Party in the backyard, yours or mine. Hey, either way, we just kicking it in Tennessee. Rolling on them back roads, blowing pine, sipping on that moonshine all the time. Party in the backyard, yours or mine. Hey,
Neo, sooner or later you're going to realize, just as I did, there's a difference between knowing the path and walking it.